Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Backtalk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, how sweet that is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Kevin Carr.
And this is Backtalk. Kev, moving to another worldwide war. Might have had the same feeling I had that I was looking forward to seeing Project Hail Mary.
Well, what's funny, I did not know a lot about it because I've been focusing on other things. And I know there's a lot of marketing. And one of the things I like about this job is I see the movies early enough that I can kind of avoid a lot of the marketing sometime. And I did for that one. And it was, and that was a neat way to go into this because you're like, oh, yeah, the world's ending. But it kind of has this optimistic side to it.
It does. You had the same feeling I had as I'm looking forward to this because I'm getting out of this world.
Yeah.
Which is tanking.
Yeah. And you're going, I'll get on a spaceship and travel to Tau Ceti, 11 light years away.
You're right.
I have not yet looked up what Neil deGrasse Tyson has to say about this. He usually deconstructs that in space.
Yeah, movies. Well, as I understand, Andy Weir, who had done The Martian, is meticulous in his research.
Yeah.
And so my guess is that if it's 4 or 5 years to get back home, that he's probably right.
Well, there would have been time dilation in the capsule. That would be the difference. It would take how long, because the fuel, the stuff they used as fuel, allows them to go close to the speed of light.
Okay.
But he would have aged forever. And I guess maybe they address that with the suspended animation, but
Yeah. Light years away.
Makes the drive to El Paso seem breezy.
Just because this is a side note, I would like to believe in extraterrestrial presence. I would like to, but the distances are so freaking enormous. Even an advanced civilization, I just don't know how they could do it.
There's two ways to look at that. Whether you believe there's extraterrestrial life of some sort.
Yeah.
And whether we're ever going to see them up close and in person.
Right.
I think the universe is replete with life. That there's loads of it everywhere in forms we can't even conceive of. Now, whether that life can travel among the stars, I don't know if that's happening.
I don't think it was from the movie, but something relatively new to me was the thinking that with so much out there.
Yeah.
Do you think we're the only one? Do you think that this is made for just us?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, if you got infinite, it's the monkeys typing Shakespeare on the infinite number of typewriters.
I never believed that, but
that's a lot. That would be a lot to the one. What about the one monkey that gets to like the very end of Julius Caesar and then types an ampersand? You're like, ah, sorry, monkey. We got to go for another one.
All right. Ryan Gosling plays our hero, a middle school teacher.
Yeah.
He's more than that. He has his PhD in microbiology.
He fell back on teaching.
He did.
And that was probably the most unrealistic thing. And there was a bunch of kids in middle school. They're like, yeah, let's learn science.
Yes.
And you don't get that in the schools.
No, you don't. But apparently he's the kind of person that the government wanted to take this space adventure because the sun was dying.
Yeah.
It is actually anyway, isn't it?
I mean,
billions of years.
We're not going to see it burn out. We got some time. It is more likely that there's going to be a couple mass extinction events on our planet before we get to a sun burning.
It looks
out,
like we're on our way.
Yeah. Well, there have been a couple.
So the government drafts him.
Yeah, they recruit him. They want somebody who thinks outside of the box because they have questions they can't answer and they want to try and answer them quickly. Yeah.
Something called an astrophage. Is like a microorganism or something that's infecting the sun.
Yeah.
And
a not too subtle allegory for oil.
It is. Well, and so he's on his way.
Yeah.
And along the way, the nice part of this show is that he meets somebody else.
Yeah.
Coming the other way.
That's
it's really
right.
Cute kind of thing. That
well, because they rendezvous early, but he has another ship from...
Yeah,
another an alien. Would you see any
strange looking ship?
Well, yeah. Well, it's not going to look like a Corvette. It's another world.
Yeah, I know. And so he meets him. Now, I'm all for everything that happens in this film. I'm an optimist about it all. And I'd like to think that this is possible. I'd like to think that we'd be aware when our son is dying and that we would meet somebody else. Now, what about this new creature?
It's very difficult in the marketing because you don't want to give too much of the character's name. He calls him Rocky.
Yeah.
Because he's like a rock. You don't want to give too much away, but you want to show that it's not just some guy farting around in space by himself. He's got somebody to bounce ideas off of, yes. And he's somebody he can interact with. It's always nice to have it be kind of cute.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't think it is.
I'm a bit disappointed.
Okay.
They chose not to have a face on this one. I realize I'm being anthropomorphic or whatever you call it, but I kind of like some expression. I mean, if you think of any of the creatures that we've depicted in films, I thought they've all had more physically going for them than this one, which is really...
Well, that's why I think they did that, is because it would be different. You're right. If you saw something with two eyes, bilateral symmetry and a nose and a mouth like we have, an octopus doesn't look like us, and that's on our planet, you know?
Good one. And he's cute.
Mm-hmm.
One of the major themes for me is the cooperation for survival.
Oh, yeah.
And which resonates almost immediately. We are now in the United States hammering so much that we're losing.
But some people might be like, how dare they? This is clearly directed at the current administration. This movie was in development for years.
Yeah, right.
This movie was easily started. And when the book was published before we had the last presidential election. So that's not how movies work. Just because it comes out at a time and it's very relevant, that's not on purpose, because movies take years to be put together.
Oh, of course. And because they're universals.
Yeah.
And the movies are made of universals, and particularly movies like this. If you look at Space Odyssey and so on, there's always themes that rise above whatever technicalities there are.
Yeah.
And so I buy into that.
Well, and it's funny because the stuff that you see people sort of admire and revere of, like, stories of the past, and this isn't a science fiction one, but like something like The Andy Griffith Show, which has a lot of really good morals that, or Little House on the Prairie, mm-hmm. that has an attraction to some certain people of a political persuasion, but the messaging in those shows and movies are universal themes of cooperation,
yes.
And helping your fellow man, and you can't get mad at that, which if they were made 50, 60, 70 years ago, you know, those are universal themes, but to go after something because, oh, it's saying cooperation, how dare, how woke. It's like, what's wrong with cooperation, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. The visuals are pretty striking in this.
It is,
don't you think?
Yeah. Well, and it's very tough to do a space movie without, it's dark and it's night all the time in space. And to get a visually stimulating movie.
Yeah.
That's from the perspective of a spaceship in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Is challenging. Yeah. But I think they do a great job. And they, meaning Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the directors of it.
Yeah.
Who did the Lego movie. These are guys who have shown that they can do multiple types of films and really make them work. And this one's a 2.5 hour movie.
I know. I thought maybe a bit too long.
It can drag, but it was just, not everything has to go super fast. And I think they had enough changes in the plot and development I never was bored.
And they had enough anticlimax going on there.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin Carr, we're going to have to discuss more.
Yeah.
They'll be able to hear more of you. They don't want to hear more of me, but they want to hear more about you.
They want to hear you, too.
But they want to hear you. What do you advise?
I say go see it. And I know it was shot, a lot of the cool scenes were shot for IMAX, so if you can go see it in a large format, even better.
And some of our screens, such as what I go to at Lenox usually, and sometimes in Gateway, is those screens are big.
They do have some big screens.
Yeah, that you don't have to have IMAX.
But they have 70 millimeter projection at the Gateway. So, I mean, that's the screen you want to go to.
Yeah. So for a family?
Little kids will get bored. If it were all Rocky all the time, they'd have a lot of fun. But it takes a good half the movie before you really... meet him.
And I thought that took a long time for him to meet.
Yeah, Ron. Because that's not what the movie's about. That's just an element of it.
Kevin Carr, Project Hail Mary. What the? Now, Kev, I don't watch a lot of football.
Yeah, neither do I.
But what is your understanding of Hail Mary?
Well, the Hail Mary pass is the classic, just throw it and hope that somebody catches it. It's the longest long shot you've got. And that's the whole point in this movie, is that this is the one chance to do it. This is the one throw they get before the time runs out. Hope it works. And you pray. That's the whole thing, is you're saying a prayer when you throw it.
That's here. And I think it's a good caution that, you know, we tend to get to be very comfortable, even with the Iran war, for instance. Mm. We sitting here in Columbus, Ohio, are pretty comfortable. And I can afford the 30 cents extra that I'm now paying for my gasoline.
Yeah.
And I don't like what it suggests, but basically I can. So it's nice to be shocked at the possibility. And I think the little microbes or astrophages or whatever they are a good caution. But we knew that from COVID. There's stuff out there that we can't control.
There's evidence from a scientific perspective of space bacteria and organisms that likely were on Earth and got kicked out. And then when they go into space, once they kind of get past that, the height, and it turns into space, those are very dangerous because they're bred in the harsher conditions. Mm. I mean, they're terrestrial based. You know, if there's like stuff on the outside of a spaceship or something like that, or a lunar module. But if stuff has been out there being exposed to all that radiation, it could be dangerous to us. Now, I don't know if it would have any effect on anybody on another planet. But no, the astrophages I mentioned in the other part of the show, I mentioned they're an allegory for oil because they look like oil, first of all.
they
provide the most powerful propulsion that you can get. You can't travel without them. Mm-hmm. But they are also the subject of our own destruction.
Yeah, very good.
By changing the climate of our planet. It's a pretty clear analogy. When I was watching, I'm like, oh, it's pretty obvious what he's doing with that.
Now, what do you think about their choice of Ryan Gosling? He pretty much controls the movie.
I used to not like Ryan Gosling. I mean, we're talking like Notebook era.
Right.
And as early, even stuff like Half Nelson, look, he does a great job, but he's a very understated actor.
Yeah.
At least he was there. I'm a huge Gosling fan now.
I am too.
And the movie that turned me around on him was The Nice Guys with Russell Crowe.
Oh, yeah.
He is a very likable, I like him best when he's not cool. Or when he's at least that he's not doing the biggest things.
Yeah.
He's completely able to be hurt and fall over. And that's why he was so great as Ken.
Yep. I just feel that sense of humor that he brings with him. Subtle as it is. He's a nerdy guy. He has his PhD in microbiology. Yeah. So he's a smart guy. I like the fact that he can be confused, that everything is not solvable immediately for him. And yet I love his sense of humor, particularly when he gets with Rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually earlier than that.
Well, yeah, just him alone. Just
right.
Well, and that's what's funny is when I saw this movie, I didn't even know it was by Andy Weir. I didn't know Andy Weir wrote it.
Right, okay.
And I remember thinking as I'm watching this, I go, this reminds me a lot of The Martian. You know, the guy's stuck in space trying to science the heck out of everything.
Whereas Matt Damon doesn't really have a sense of humor, as far as I can tell.
He can, but I think there's much more of that from Ryan Gosling, because he's brilliant at putting humor into difficult situations. Phil Lord and Chris Miller are also very good at in their direction of that.
And I remember hearing somebody comment that Gosling is best when he's with somebody else. They were skeptical as to whether he could carry the whole film, which he does, but that he was a leading man, but rather that he worked very well with somebody else who was bright.
But I think he's good with him. I think they're right in the sense that he's best when he's bouncing stuff off of, but he can do it on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite part of the movie is when they're trying to convince him to go. He goes, I put the knot in astronaut. I can't. I've never spacewalk. I can't even moonwalk.
Right. That's right. Yeah, I love that. I love it when he turns him down.
Yeah.
He says, I don't think I can do that. I can't do this.
Yeah.
And yet the fate of the world, they're asking him.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good stuff. When you think of a science fiction space movie, what's your litmus test for greatness? Is there one?
Well, I mean, are you talking about like a more intellectual? Like this would fall into the realm of like 2001 and Interstellar. Whereas Star Wars is absolutely a space movie, but it's very different than this.
Yes. Star Wars has actually some of the elements that we're seeing in this film.
Oh, sure. I mean, you're seeing the effects and stuff, but Star Wars is a Western. You know, that's really what it is.
It has a light heart to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's an action movie. Yeah. You know? Even Star Trek falls into this.
Yes, that's a good example. You
know, Star Wars and Star Trek are vastly different franchises that people often conflate. But they do fall into that action genre. Closer to the G-Wiz stuff. Although, I guess if you watch the original Star Trek The Motion Picture, that falls into the solve some issue in space, but deal with the reality of it.
Well, like the fact that Star Trek was heavily thematic.
Yeah.
It was like watching.
Well, it still is.
Yes. Like watching The Twilight Zone. I mean, you just knew you were going to be taught something about humanity. And Star Trek does that. And I think this one does that.
Oh, yeah.
Though they're very genial about how they mix in the fun in all of this, yeah. and how we all can feel good about it, about yeah. the film, and yet feel that there's some cautions about it.
Well, and that's the challenge on these, if you call this category a space
yes,
movie,
yeah.
is I have a science background, so I understand a lot of this
okay.
more than your average person.
Okay.
I've heard of Tau Ceti before
I saw
this movie, yeah. Weirdly, it was my dad's favorite star. He was into astrophysics and stuff.
All right.
So I know a lot of this stuff. I know the restrictions of fast, close to light travel and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in that, but you got to throw a lot of that science out there to make it work. That's a Star Trek tries to, but it has all these like mumbo jumbo definitions that
stuff.
Work. Yeah, techno babble that explains it. But these kind of films, you need to explain. It's not just we're gonna go into hyperspace, pew, you know, that kind of thing. You have to explain it. That's a hurdle to get for your audience, and if you really wanted to make it. And so while you're putting that in there, you got to have somebody affable in there. You got to have characterization. You got to have development. The fact that they tell it in flashbacks. Gets him out of the capsule, and it gives him other people to interact with.
Yeah, yeah. And I liked her. Huller was her last name.
I can't remember the
Sandra Huller.
Yeah, his boss.
Yeah, I liked her.
She was good.
I liked her kind of dour approach.
Well, she's the no-nonsense type. Every office has him.
Yeah.
I was not the one.
I know the one I wanted to remind you of, where I thought, well, Ryan Gosling is perfect. This is when he interacts with Lionel Boyce as Carl.
Oh, yeah, I know. Carl's great.
I loved that
yeah.
Between the two of them. Talk
about. Because Carl is very, he's no nonsense, too.
Yeah.
I think the underlying thing is even if people in this movie are doing things that are unpleasant to other people, they're doing it for the best reasons.
Yes.
Nobody's a jerk in this movie. And I know that's not realistic. I don't need to see that in a movie.
The sequence I love that indicates to me how much I would have liked to have seen even more is when they're picking up the materials, their initial put together the boxes and so.
Oh yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
They're at the store. It's like a Lowe's or something. I loved that.
I've always wanted to go into Lowe's and just go buy a bunch of stuff that you like. You bring. Oh, you have all these tarps and. And
of duct tape.
Like lye and duct tape and a chainsaw. You're like, it's for work. Trust me.
Yeah. They're throwing in candy. And,
mm-hmm.
and
Skittles had a promotion yeah. on it, I think.
And I think that they caught that humor just really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is serious business. You're saving the world. But yet there's a time when you can have fun when you're bonding, such as he was with Carl.
Well, and even if rough as it would be to deal with the end of the world directly, you know, and the right. whole thing, like, you're here to fix this problem that's going to kill us all in 30 years. Even in that, you are going to have relationships. You are going to have interaction.
Yes, yes.
You're going to have jokes. Yeah. And if you don't have that, why are you saving the world at that point?
And I like the ending. Actually, as corny as it is, I liked it.
I think it worked.
Yeah. And again, it carries that friendship motif.
Yeah.
Be a little bit of...
That's one where it's a little bit where you look at the signs, you'd be like, that's a long shot.
Right, yeah. But it reminds me of Shawshank.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, I get that. I see that.
All
yeah.
right. Kevin Carr, this has been delightful. What's so good about me... is that I knew you would be a perfect person for this, not even thinking about the fact that you have a science background, but yet I hate to embarrass you, but you're so smart about everything. That was no surprise to me that you warmed up to some of the science in this movie called Project Hail Mary. So, Kev, what do you think? It's out there now.
Yeah.
It's competing with, we just did a review of Undertone. Which is a completely different kind of movie.
Very different film.
Right? What do you think now? What do you advise? Because people we're after the Oscars. And,
yeah.
And so we've just been bombarded with some pretty good films.
Mm.
So what about this one?
Oh, this one definitely, it's doing well. I forget what the it's been since, but it's the first movie in ages that's an original story.
Ah.
That's not a sequel
right.
or a franchise to... make as much as it did opening weekend. It's a big screen movie. It's worth seeing on the big screen.
And it fulfills my expectation because I said, this is a real Hail Mary. Who am I going to get to do this review with me? Well, it's Kevin Carr.
This was your Hail Mary for the Project Hail Mary.